Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hello and welcome to the Forum Club, Courtside Karen Edition. Yeah, it's about as much attention as I want to give to that. Guys, Jovan Buha, Anthony Slater, I'm Bill Orem. It's the story that is dominating the NBA this morning, guys. LeBron's interaction with a courtside fan and her ensuing social media posts. Any quick reacts to the viral moment before we get onto the road trip?
Jovan did a bunch of reporting on it, so we could swing it to him. I'm just stunned that there just was a courtside fan to engage with.
Yes!
But I understand Atlanta, you know, that part of the country has a different rules, clearly right now, different leniency. And I know through Jovan and Chris Kirchner's reporting that, you know, they went through a strict process to allow this fan in with, you know, tests. But there's a reason most of the, even the arenas that are allowing people in, they have like a little tar, like Utah, for example. I saw a game in Utah yesterday or a couple days ago. They have a tarp, and like the first fan that's actually in the arena is like 10 rows up at least. I cannot believe that you have a blonde lady 10 feet away from players yelling at them. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, I was surprised that there was even kind of a discussion of how to handle it. I felt like once she took down her mask and you know, was that close to the players, like that is where it becomes a bit of a safety hazard. So I was surprised, you know, because it felt like, you know, the security guards were there for like a couple of minutes, like, you know, game minutes. So, you know, probably close to like 10 minutes or so, it felt like. So I was just kind of confused on, you know, it felt like that should have been, hey, if they're, you know, pulling their mask down courtside, like they should be out of here. I thought, you know, the most interesting thing to me is like, this wasn't even the craziest fan interaction on the trip. in Cleveland, you had a guy who, you know, it kind of went underreported, but went to the game with these t-shirts with slogans calling out LeBron and was just like, you know, hurling profanities at him from the 100 section. And that was a one-sided affair. You know, at least this was kind of a back and forth, but that was just purely the guy basically went to the game to troll LeBron. And then according to the police report, what was, you know, had multiple security guards have to drag him out as he like was attacking the security guards and the police officers. And like, so this was like the second time that an incident with LeBron and a fan on this road trip. And it wasn't even the craziest one. It just got the most attention because it was the juiciest. It was the most salacious. And she was posting all about it.
It's also all on camera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, at least
yeah.
That first one came from the 100 sections, not from 7 no, feet sure. away. That to me was my biggest problem. Because, I mean, like, with LeBron's post-game comments, I thought he handled it very well post-game, almost kind of leaning into it in a joking way, not taking it too serious. And I think he's correct. Like, we've missed the fan aspect of sports. I can't wait for it to be back, even though that sometimes comes with, hey, you know, there's a Giants-Dodgers game where there's 7 brawls in different, you know, areas of the stands. And, you know, there's pregame fights at the tailgates of college football games, all that stuff. Like, there's obviously, you know, drunk rowdiness that leads to bad human situations. But later in the stages of this pandemic, hopefully we're later in the stages of it, to just allow people courtside, that just presents an entirely different problem where, you know, what if an outbreak sprouted from that? Like, that affects the league's scheduling, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, so a couple points on that. Like, just because, like, we all are eager to have fans back in arenas doesn't mean that, like, we have to accept all that that means right now. Like, just because, like, LeBron can say we've missed the fans and it was great to have be in a building that had fans. Like, you can be excited to have fans, but also still expect that they are kept a safe distance away and that they're going to abide by the health and safety protocols. It's not a zero sum game. It's not like you either have to want the fans there and you then have to live with the fact that they could be putting you and your family at risk, or not have fans at all. Like, the Hawks, I think, are. I don't know how many arenas have fans that are that close to the floor. It might just be Atlanta. I'm not sure anyone else has fans that are, like, literally, you know, putting Instagram posts of their uncomfortable shoes on the hardwood. And so there's that. But then two, you know, and I've mentioned this on a couple of Zooms with the Lakers lately, and I'm probably gonna write a little something that ties into it. But, you know, the Lakers are one of only six teams that haven't had a game postponed because of health and safety protocols. Now, a lot of that's luck and comes down to who you're scheduled to play and how safe that team has been. So, I mean, it's not entirely in your control, but, like, obviously the Lakers have been very diligent, and to then suddenly be exposed to a maskless person whose behavior you can't account for, and frankly seems to have a significant amount of hostility for the health and safety, you know, not protocols to civilians, but, you know, just to pandemic protocols. You know, if you, I don't know how.
You don't think she's been avoiding Atlanta bars? You don't think she's really been, you know, doing quarantine very safely?
I don't know how deep you guys got into the Carlos family's Instagram accounts, but
I did not.
I went fairly deep down that wormhole last night and this morning, and there's plenty of maskless, crowded encounters for those fine Georgians. So. I just think that, like, to expose these teams that are jumping through all these hoops, I just think it's insulting to the players, you know, who are making all these incredible sacrifices to have a season. And then you let, you know, this woman and, you know, whoever else, you know, might, you know, be within spitting distance of the court, in that realm. I think it's a slap in the face to everyone who is abiding by the health and safety protocols. And it also speaks to, you know, it's like, you know, the health and safety protocols with, like, kind of a wink and a smile, right? Because it still comes down to the bottom line. And, you know, I'm sure that, you know, it does make a difference to the Hawks to be able to sell courtside seats to some, you know, wealthy liquor distributors like those people. And it just, to me, it just ultimately ends up being a bad look for the league, because, as you said, Slater, you could, and God, I feel like such an old, like, get off my lawn, like, grandpa right now. Although the grandpas I know of currently have 25-year-old Real Housewives. But I feel like you need to see through your vision of, like, protecting the players. And if there was some sort of outbreak that spawned from this, or if suddenly the Lakers were in the health and safety protocol and had games delayed, it's like, you know, it just, there's no good that comes from it, you know, from a broader perspective. So anyway, that's the end of my rant.
Good game by the Lakers, though. That's a good win, I thought. You know, like, seventh game of a 7-game trip when you know you're going home, particularly now. Like, I understand the Hawks weren't the toughest team on the trip, but that's kind of a tough up-tempo, you know, young, frisky team to play to kind of close it out in a situation like that where, you know, you're suddenly getting yelled at by a couple and you're probably like, oh, let's just get out of here. And I thought, you know, that's a mature win from the Lakers.
They were down six with, like, a minute left in the third. And then you saw that that great lineup that the Lakers, you know, have turned to in the last couple of games come in. And Montrezl Harrell came in, and all of a sudden you have, you know, you end the third quarter with a 5-point run, and then you score 11 straight to open the fourth. So it ends up being a 16-point run for the Lakers with that lineup, which is LeBron and then the four bench guys. That has been kind of a revelation for the Lakers, this lineup. And you talked about, you know, needing some energy to stay with, you know, that young, high energy Hawks team, you know, Trae Young, John Collins, Cam Reddish. That unit kind of feels like the fountain of youth for LeBron James.
No doubt.
I really think it's also unlocked Montrezl Harrell's game offensively, where you look at he and THT, I believe THT has assisted him the second most of any player this season behind LeBron. I think he scored something like 34, 36 points over his last two games. And I don't think it's a coincidence that that has coincided with this new unit, because, you know, one of the things that was a struggle for that previous, you know, lineup of meh, whatever you want to call it, was there just wasn't much playmaking and ball handling. And Trez's stuff was a lot of post-ups, a lot of mid-range. And he can, you know, still get his 15, 18 points off of that. But the way they're using him now as a roll guy, as a dive guy, you know, parked in the dunker spot, and having guys in THT and Alex who can get downhill and create for him, I think it's unlocked Trez, and you've seen a better version of him. So I definitely, you know, I think it's gonna be interesting to see what Frank does long term. I don't think you can just outright bench Wes and Keith for the foreseeable future. But I do think it was telling that in that Boston game, you know, when they needed a win to avoid losing three in a row, he went with those nine guys. And you know, that clearly is the nine guys he trusts right now, you know, to win a game. And so I think that was kind of one of the telling things we learned from the trip.
I think that took balls by Frank, by the way. And I think it was the right time in the season to do it, because you couldn't, you know, it's been pretty apparent, especially from early on in the year, that Wes Matthews was having a hard time acclimating, and it just hasn't really worked so far. But this is a guy who, you know, chose to come to the Lakers, you know, expected to have a defined role, didn't sign for the minimum, by the way. You know, you can't just not play him. You know, he's a respected veteran. I think you gave both he and Markieff a reasonable amount of time to sort of fight for minutes. You know, you got through 20 games, and then, you know, you're struggling a little bit on the trip. You know, you kind of were able to get away with playing 10, 11 guys on a nightly basis because you were beating up on teams like Cleveland and Chicago and San Antonio a couple times, Memphis. But, you know, once you're exposed a little bit, you know, and it's not working, it's time to make some tough decisions. And, you know, I think that, you know, Frank Vogel timed it the right way. You know, I think he, you know, did it when they were kind of had their backs up against the wall a little bit. And, you know, I don't think you can say that it is getting Wesley and Markieff out of the lineup that's made the difference. But I do think condensing that rotation a little bit, giving guys more defined roles, is going to work well. And like you said, Jovan, it's not permanent. Like, those guys will play again. They will have value on this team. You know, we saw Markieff go from a non-factor in the first round last year against Portland to basically being, you know, the guy who turned the second round into a rout against Houston with his contributions. And so there will be opportunities like that again for these guys. But for where they are right now in the season, if they're going to be at full strength, that nine-man rotation seems like a winning combination and something that Frank Vogel can just rely on.
Wes Matthews is a minus 19 this season. He's the only rotation player in the minus. That's like kind of hard to do on this Lakers team, right? So he's just, he just looks aged to me and looks like a 10th, 11th man, and looks like a guy who at this current stage, if the playoffs started tomorrow, he'd probably be on the outside of the rotation looking in. He'd be J.R. Smith from last year's playoffs, Dion Waiters, you know, whoever, which is fine. I mean, he's not costing them much. What you said, he didn't sign the minimum. What was his contract?
Was it the mid-level? It was the $3 million biannual.
Yeah, you know, teams miss on that sometimes. I thought he'd be an upgrade over Danny Green. I don't know that he has. I would say he has not been, even though Danny Green probably frustrated Lakers fans more. Danny Green probably gave them more.
Fans also tether their expectations to contracts and what they pay on guys. Like, and like, even though it's not fans' money, but the fans felt like they had invested $15 million worth of emotional equity into Danny Green. So it's like all of a sudden it's like fans start getting mad. Oh, he's stealing money, even though it's like, it's not your money.
Yeah.
And whereas Wesley Matthews for $3 million, even if you had similar production expectations, you can live with the miss more than you could with Danny Green being so up and down a year ago.
Well, and the other thing is the supplementary guard wing rotation last year had like kind of Danny Green felt like he was kind of at the top of it. Maybe you would even say like above KCP. Some of that was because of salary, and Caruso definitely was like a third on that. Whereas now, I mean, it's like KCP, Caruso, wide gap Matthews. And the fact is, if Matthews struggles, just leads to more responsibility and minutes for KCP, and particularly Caruso, the way he's playing, that's fine. You know, that's kind of that's a perfectly fine outcome, because Caruso probably needs more of a role.
Well, and THT too, and THT, I think we know, is an imperfect player. He's a little can be a little overeager, and he makes mistakes. But he also provides his game balances out the rest of the bench a lot better than Wesley Matthews does, because he gives you the ball handling and the attack-minded presence that you otherwise don't have. And so, you know, and also you develop him by playing him. And so I think, you know, Wesley Matthews does kind of become the odd man out if you don't want to play three guys who more or less have the same role off the, or not off the bench with KCP. But also, and by the way, it's made easier by the fact that that Kyle Kuzma is doing more of the things that you would expect Wesley Matthews to do. He has been defending at a really high level. He's been rebounding. He's been, you know, I just think, you know, he's been knocking down open threes. I mean, Kyle Kuzma has made it easier to get by without Wesley Matthews also.
Kyle Kuzma's discovered who he should be in the NBA, seems like.
To follow through on that, like, I just think that there's been a real maturity to Kyle Kuzma. And it feels like this year he has sort of, like, we've kind of hit, like, the ultimate DGAF Kyle Kuzma. Like, he, you know, is less concerned about numbers. I mean, I don't know if he's less concerned about numbers, but he is certainly, like you said, it seems like he has embraced what he can be. And, you know, he's had a couple double doubles on this trip. You know, so he had a game with 6 offensive rebounds. You know, younger Kyle Kuzma, you know, who was going out and looking for 25 a night, wasn't going in and crashing the boards and getting six offensive rebounds in a game. I just think that he has really embraced kind of what is needed from him on a given night. And there have been nights where he's been needed to go score 25 points because Anthony Davis has been out or LeBron's been out, and he has risen to the occasion on those in those instances. But for the most part with this team, you know, that's not going to be what they need from him. And he has, and listen, like, I mean, last night, if somebody has a box score up, you can check me on this, but I think he had like 6 points and 4 rebounds or something like that. Like, it was a quiet production night, but like, there was the great video of him, you know, basically one-on-one with Trae Young and steering Trae Young away from the basket, and, you know, a great defensive possession. And Kuz tweeted it last night with, you know, kind of like, you know, the sarcastic, you know, all cap lowercase, you know, Kuz doesn't play defense. And it's like, I think he's relishing becoming, you know, a more complete player. I think he has found the joy and beauty in becoming a more complete player.
Yeah, and I feel like there's been some parallels with him and Alex in terms of their ability just to fill multiple roles and do multiple things. And I think that's what you want, you know, next to a LeBron or an AD is you want guys who are going to wear multiple hats, aren't, you know, and that's where I think Wes is, you know, to kind of tie it back to that, like, that's where he hasn't really fit in, because he's just basically been a spot up shooter. And if you have guys like Alex, THT, Kyle, who could get out in transition, they can also spot up, you know, they can cut, they can handle the ball a little bit. Like, those guys just can do multiple things that, you know, Wes doesn't really provide. So, you know, I think another trend that we've seen the past couple of games is the fast break points. Like, they had 18 fast break points last night, and you can't not say that's because, you know, THT and Alex are playing more. Like, those guys fly out in transition. So, I think, but Kyle, I mean, to me, Kyle is like the Swiss Army knife. I know LeBron also said that about Alex, but I do think like both of those guys can do, you know, they get you offensive rebounds. They make timely threes. They can get you stops and switch and defend multiple guys. So, you know, having multiple types of those guys in your rotation, I think is very valuable in 2021.
For sure. 2 losses on the road trip. Overall, 5-2, obviously, is a success, particularly how it ended. But the 2 losses, the Detroit one, you know, no Davis and... I mean, I'm surprised they lost that game, but that's probably not the one that we should discuss the most. I would say it's the Philadelphia one, right? I mean, because the Sixers are emerging right now as we speak as the best team in the East. We'll see if that continues. But Embiid is, to me, he's in that 1-2-3 spot of the MVP race with LeBron and Jokic, however you want to slot them right now. What did you think of that game, that matchup? I mean, Philly does have some components that kind of do match up well, like just particularly with the Lakers. I mean, the fact that you do have a monster Embiid inside, you know, that's battling with Davis. And then, you know, Ben Simmons is about as good of a LeBron defender as you're going to get at this point. What did you guys think of that game?
I thought that the Lakers actually defended Joel Embiid pretty well. That game had a pretty tight whistle, especially against Embiid, and that's the risk you run, you know, when you're defending a superstar. And, you know, the Lakers kind of saw that last night with Trae Young. But I felt that, you know, they got some ticky-tack fouls against them. He ended up shooting 13 free throws. But aside from that, you know, it was 8 of 18 from the floor. I thought Marc Gasol continued to defend him well. I think entering the game, Joel had shot like 31% overall for his career against Marc Gasol per NBA.com's tracking data. So, you know, Mark, he's not the, you know, Embiid stopper, but he's big, he's strong, he has good feet, and he's kind of good at the things that Embiid likes to do, which is, you know, kind of post you up, face you up. Like Mark can defend that. It's when you stretch him out to the 3-point line, put him in pick and roll actions, like that's where he can be exposed. But if you're just going to dump the ball to Embiid on the block or the mid post, like Mark can hang with him there. So I thought he did a good job. I thought Trez actually did a better job. Now, when Trez defended him, the Lakers really loaded up and you know, almost always doubled him, and then had a third guy there waiting just in case he somehow got past the double. But I thought AD defended him well over the last like 5 minutes. So I don't think the Embiid stuff was as bad as some people made it seem to be. The guy that really hurt them was Tobias Harris, and I felt he really feasted on the weak side of, you know, all that attention they threw at Embiid. Tobias was often the guy, you know, getting the late rotations, attacking from the weak side. So I think that's something to monitor. You know, Ben Simmons got out in transition. But this team, I think the one thing that they possess that kind of negates some of the Lakers' advantages is just a bunch of size. Like you look at some of those guys that they're throwing out there, they're huge. And you know, I think the Lakers in most matchups have a size advantage. They don't have a size advantage against Philly. Philly's big, long, and really good defensively. So I have concerns about their offense in a series against the Lakers, but defensively, I think they could certainly hang with them.
Yeah, especially if Thibel can figure out his offense enough to like stay on the floor. I mean, I saw him against Indiana the other day just wrecking havoc defensively. He would just kind of add another defensive component to what Philly should be. They look better with Doc Rivers at the helm. That seems to have unlocked Tobias Harris. That wasn't just like a one game nice game for Tobias Harris. Like he's had a very good early season, which has raised their ceiling. What do you think about Simmons on LeBron?
LeBron still had 34. And this was one of those games where it felt like a quiet 34 kind of. You know, he did hit some shots in the fourth, but I don't know. Like I think it's just is LeBron hitting a shot at this point. You know, he has been not attacking the rim as much this season. It feels like that's almost a form of load management in games. Is he's kind of just become, I know Marcus Thompson just wrote about it, like he's become this elite marksman where averaging a career high in attempts and threes and also shooting a career high percentage at, 41%. So I think with LeBron, at least up to this point in the season, it's just been a matter of, is he making his shots? That's kind of dictating the matchups. But I still lean LeBron. Like I think I'm with you in that, Ben. If I'm drafting guys to defend LeBron, he's probably in my top 10, if not approaching that top 5. But I still think LeBron is LeBron. I mean, you know, we've been seeing it all trip. Like the Cleveland game or Milwaukee, you know, this game, like he can drop 35, you know, with his eyes closed. So I still, you know, give a heavy advantage to LeBron in any matchup, including Ben Simmons.
You think there's potentially 9 guys you would rather have guarding LeBron than Ben Simmons?
9?
I'm just saying, if you say he's definitely in the top 10.
I mean, like, I said top,
you said top 10, and you said approaching top 5. But so then say he's in your top 6 if you're ruling out that he's the 10th. I'm just curious. Like, I don't know if I could name 5 guys that I would rather have defending LeBron than Ben Simmons.
I would take Kawhi.
Kawhi's dropped off defensively. I think
he has, but I felt there were moments last year when he turned it on. I still think he has like top 5 defender in the league ceiling. He just can't get to that for 48 minutes.
Yeah, well, let's talk about over the course of a playoff series then. We're talking 6-7 games, you know, bulks of each game. Because of Ben Simmons' youth and just his just burst, lateral quickness, that, again, I just think Kawhi was the answer when Kawhi was Ben Simmons' age. Remember when he was on those Spurs teams? There's that like famous little clip where LeBron's at the free throw line, looks over, and Kawhi's coming back in the game. He's like, oh, God damn it. It's like, to me, that's where Ben Simmons is at defensively. Now, Ben Simmons clearly isn't Kawhi, you know, from an offensive standpoint, but Ben Simmons, I still believe, just is maybe the most underrated defender in basketball. Like I think he's like a top 3 defensive player. We're not just talking about guarding LeBron. I think he's like a top 3 defensive player in the league.
I mean, you can make that case. I'm not going to like necessarily disagree with that.
Come on, I guess we can't have an agreeable podcast. Disagree.
I know. I think there's a lot. It's a lot of like splitting hairs. Like I look at Miami. I feel like Bam and Jimmy are in that conversation. you know, I'm trying to go down the list here. I mean, Giannis.
Giannis, he doesn't really guard. That's like, I know one of the issues that, like, you know, LeBron has, I think, through some of his media channels voiced about Giannis. Like, defensive player of the year doesn't take the big wing assignment when we play him. So, but, I mean, yeah, if we're just talking pure defenders, Giannis, I mean, he's the reigning defensive player of the year. Gobert has an unbelievable regular season impact. I don't know. We've probably gone too far down the defensive rabbit hole. All I'll say, though, is, like, because of that game and because of how Philly has looked early this season, to me, they have emerged as probably, but they're right up there with Brooklyn as like the most interesting potential finals matchup with the Lakers, more than I think Milwaukee, who the Lakers handled pretty easily. And then even Miami, who, you know, that was the matchup last year that they kind of disposed of them. And what's Miami right now? Like 7-13, something like that.
Yeah. That hasn't aged well. I'm with you. I think, I'd still put Brooklyn, it might be a 1A, 1B or 1-2. I haven't really decided on that yet. Clearly I need to work on my ranking here, but I would say Philly is definitely ahead of Milwaukee, Boston, Miami, whoever else you want to throw in the mix.
Miami is 7-13. I didn't realize it gotten that bad. Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, they've had a lot of coronavirus issues
for sure,
different health stuff. So it's like, it's probably a little bit of a deceiving 7-13, but I would say overall, like, they've, you know, Tyler Hero has not bounced back, like, you know, trampolined off the bubble like we thought. A lot of the bubble stars have been disappointing early in the season. I mean, you look at Denver, Jamal Murray's not having a good season. Now Jokic is, but Lakers and Nuggets on Thursday, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and then the Pistons on Saturday, which is only interesting because they had a game postponed last night, although everything seems to be trending toward them getting back on the horse. But
a Pistons rematch. How did they lose that? But I have to admit, I barely monitored that Pistons game. I figured that was just a Lakers walkover. And then a few days later, the Pistons came and played the Warriors in person, and the Warriors, who are an average team this season, beat the Pistons by like 30. Blake Griffin was like, you know, walking around the court with a cane, it almost looked like. What happened in that game? How did that happen?
Well, Balake did make like 6 threes.
Wow.
That was a big part of it. You know, and like no AD. And the Lakers just were listless. Like, I mean, it looked like they, you know, felt like they could kind of flip the switch like they did the night before in Philly. You know, that I think was really probably what you would look at kind of as a scheduled loss. Just second half back-to-back, middle of a crazy long road trip. You're in Detroit. You know, hard to get excited about that game. You know, they just didn't bring it. I mean, I didn't have a problem with that loss, to be honest. You know, I actually didn't have a problem with either loss until they got to Boston. It's like, you need to kind of reverse course and sort of get things back on track. You can't let those losses snowball. I didn't have a problem with them losing back to back, particularly the way they lost.
Yeah. And they had that weird, I don't know, was it 7-8 minute stretch in the fourth where they didn't score? And it was just like, you know, if you're going to have one of those stretches against the Pistons, like it's just one of those weird clunkers. I think it was just compounded by, Utah having their 11 game win streak, the Clippers continuing to win. And then they lost back to back games that it just, you know, didn't really look great. But they'd been the number one seed basically all season until a few days ago, and now they're at number three. So, looking at it, like, the Pistons made 14 threes, Wayne Ellington made six, Blake Griffin made five. The Pistons shot more free throws, which is rare for the Lakers, especially against like a lottery level team. I honestly think, you know, AD, for as valuable as LeBron is offensively, and, you know, we continue to see the numbers this year where they just fall off a cliff without LeBron offensively, like AD is that valuable to this team defensively. And, you know, there have been some rim protection issues for this team. It has dropped off. I know we had that conversation a few weeks ago, but, you know, they are bottom five in multiple, you know, points in the paint allowed, you know, field goal percentage at the rim, field goal attempts at the rim. Like there are some things that are a little bit concerning with this team, despite being the number one defense. And I think that's just compounded without AD. So you have a team in Detroit, you know, Frank talked about it after, I think it was before the Boston game. Like he was like, I went back and watched the film and they hit a bunch of contested threes. Like, you know, what are we supposed to do when they're just hitting a bunch of shots? Like it was just one of those nights. So I think, as Bill said, you know, schedule loss, but also just some hot shooting, and they really missed AD defensively.
You know, it was just funny to me the way those fourth quarters went back to back. You know, the Lakers had that great run to come back and take a late lead on Detroit, you know, where they were able to score, what was it, 13 straight in the final 2 minutes or something like that. And then they go 6 or 7 minutes in the fourth quarter the next night without scoring. And it just to me, it was just like some days you're the windshield, some days you're the bug. You know, I just couldn't get worked up about it. You know, in the 90th minute of basketball they'd played, you know, that in those 48 hours. But you know, you're right. I mean, there certainly are things to watch for with the Lakers, and that Pistons game, you know, it did do one thing that I think, you know, we will look back on as significant. It forced Frank Vogel to shorten the rotation, to, you know, send Markieff and Wesley Matthews to the end of the bench, and to, you know, and to give Alex Caruso a bigger role. So I think, you know, I think in that sense, you know, wins, you know, and Frank Vogel talks about this all the time, you know, you can't have losses like that and not learn something from them. And I think, you know, the Lakers, you know, it gave the Lakers the motivation to make a change that so far has worked out really well.
Thursday's a fun one. Just like, I think it's going to be pinned up as kind of early MVP clash, you know, a little bit, I guess, like LeBron Embiid was, but like Jokic right now, I think he had 47 on the Jazz to break that 11 game win streak Utah had. They're starting to gain a rhythm, and first game after a long road trip sometimes can be a little bit dull energy wise. What are you guys looking for? I mean, West Finals rematch, which is, I still can't believe I'm saying that, but West Finals rematch.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm curious to see the Jokic Gasol matchup. I mean, that's something that we really circled in the offseason, right? That was the value of getting Marc Gasol and basically swapping Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee for Marc Gasol was that it gave you sort of that physical answer to Nikola Jokic. So I'm going to be curious to see what that looks like in the flesh. You know, the Nuggets have just been really solid lately. I mean, I think we talked about them at one point on the Forum Club here, and we talked about, you know, they were down at 12th or something in the Western Conference. You know, they're 12-8 now. They're, you know, they're fifth in the West. I mean, they've kind of found their stride. Like you said, Jamal Murray still hasn't been the player he was in the playoffs. But you know, I'm curious just to see their whole package, because you know, Porter Jr. has struggled, Murray struggled, and it has been kind of the Jokic show. And I don't know, I have no problem with casting it as an early MVP matchup, because you know, and this gets back to something I think we were talking about a little bit off air, but you know, a week ago we were talking about the MVP being LeBron's to lose, and that this was a, you know, he has the early narrative momentum. He's playing like an MVP. He's got the best team in the league. And then the Lakers go 5-2 on a road trip. LeBron plays every game. And like, I'm seeing all sorts of, like, you know, articles all over the internet that are like, it's an Embiid versus Jokic MVP race, because LeBron, you know, kind of was a little bit pedestrian on this road trip by his own standards. And I think, you know, LeBron can seize that narrative momentum back pretty quickly with a strong showing if he can outplay Jokic. It's also so early, like we're just swinging wildly. Have you guys seen the video of the guy it's like how you cut down a palm tree, and the guy who's like at the top of the palm tree and like cuts a piece of it off, and then he goes like swinging wildly to the other side. Like, that's what the MVP race right now feels like. He's just like, he's at the top of this 300-foot palm tree, just like swaying back and forth wildly.
I think there's a clear three-man race forming. Now, Luka Doncic can go on some hot streak and get into it. If the Warriors somehow surprise and Steph Curry goes on a 1 month bender where he's hitting 8 threes a game, like, he can get into it. Because, like you said, it's early. As we just saw, you know, a week ago, we didn't consider Jokic in the race because the Nuggets were a disappointment. Now they've won, you know, a handful of games in a row. And through that includes him dropping 47 on Rudy Gobert. And it's like, whoa, you know, let's add him into this conversation. So, LeBron is that, to me, for LeBron to win it, though, because I don't think his stats are going to be Jokic level, just because I don't think he's pushing for them to be like that. Jokic's stats, by the way, are ridiculous. I think the Lakers have to clearly be the best team in the league. And I don't mean, like, we all think they're the best team in the league. I just mean record-wise, right? I think they need to kind of cruise to a one seed, which I think what's changed through their 5-2 road trip is just that Utah is playing really well. The Clippers, by the way, are you know, they're the one seed right now. The Clippers are the one, the Jazz are the two as we're talking, and the Lakers are the three. So I think that's probably what's killed some of that LeBron buzz. What's interesting, Clippers, like I said, best team in the West right now. I'm not sure we consider them to have like a prime MVP candidate right now because George is playing well. The team is shooting threes unbelievable. Kawhi's awesome. I mean, well, I saw him just kind of assassinate the Knicks in a matinee the other day, but I don't know where you're at, Jovan, but to me, there's a significant drop-off after the top three right now in like early MVP race.
I do think Kawhi is probably being a little overlooked just because, you know, like they do have the best record in the league right now. His numbers aren't necessarily his best career numbers, but I do think it's going to be similar to the LeBron argument where if the Clippers end up with the best record in the league, he's clearly their best player. I know Paul George has had a really good, you know, kind of bounce back season, but I think everything runs through Kawhi there ultimately. So I think Kawhi might make it a four-man race. But, you know, it's funny. We're talking about how quickly things change. Like I just had a piece with Seth Partnow come out a couple days ago, bouncing around different topics. And like we started that piece almost a week ago. And at the time, you know, I started off with like, okay, so the Lakers are like the most dominant team that no one's talking about. Like we're talking about Utah. We're talking about the Clippers. We're talking about the Nets. But like the Lakers have the best record in the league. They're number one in net rating. You know, they're top five offense and defense. And by the time we finished the piece, they had lost the two games. You know, I was in the fourth quarter of that Boston game. I was kind of freaking out like, crap, I'm going to have to scrap like the first half of this story. You know, it's interesting how quickly these things change. Because as you said with Jokic, like a week ago, he wasn't even necessarily in the conversation because they were barely above 500, you know, and now they're back in that 4-5 mix. So it is going to be interesting. I do think that as long as the Lakers, you know, stay the one seed or you know, maybe the two seed, like LeBron will heavily be in that mix. But for me, I'm just interested to see how Denver matches up with the Lakers. And, you know, we've kind of seen the Lakers have gotten up for the bigger games this year. You know, I guess with maybe the exception of the Clippers game on opening night. But, you know, Milwaukee, Boston, Philly, like they've gotten up for those games recently. I think they're going to get up for the Denver game. And, you know, is that a 20-point home blowout where the Lakers send a message and say, hey, like, you know, last year's conference finals run was cute, but we're still the best in the West? Or is cute. That a tough game that goes out of the wire? And maybe Denver pulls it. Like, I mean, the Lakers are 4-4 at home. Like, they got to start winning some home games too. So I'm just interested to see how that game kind of plays out and sort of where it shows those two teams are currently at.
Yeah, great points all around, guys. We're going to get out of here and let folks go back to diving deep on Giuliana Carlos's Instagram feed. But in the meantime, thank you for listening. I'm Bill Oram. Thank you to Jovan Buha, Anthony Slater. Big week ahead for the Lakers. We're excited to see it. We'll be talking about it next week right here on the Forum Club.